for one, welcome our new gentlemen, overlords.
Who?
Now that's a team I can work with.
I love it. I love bringing people together.
How we doing?
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Gentlemen Overlords. I'm Andrew.
I'm Max.
I'm Robert.
Guys, let's get right into the proceedings by talking about some of these movies we've seen.
Don't you forget about me. Look my way, girl. Something breakfast.
Movies we've seen.
Robert, what have you seen?
Some of the stuff I rewatched recently. Hot Rod, which Jamie hadn't seen, threw that on the other night.
She'd never seen it?
She hadn't.
Okay, wow.
And I believe she fell asleep before the end.
So you loved it.
Wives love to do. But I enjoyed rewatching it. I do feel like it's a movie where there's like little parts that just are more of the time and are not like a problematic way, but just like
the humor
is kind of like silly in a way that like you don't see as much. So I sort of like can almost like step back and be like, I can see where someone would watch this and be like, this is trying too hard or whatever.
Yeah. The same way that I think like The Office has not really like aged like humor wise into like being like, like the sort of like
still very popular though.
I know, but I mean, like I think like the sort of like Michael Scott sort of like cringe humor I think has not like captivated people the way that it did, you know, when it first came out. But have you watched the movie with the commentary on?
Have I watched what?
Hot Rod with the commentary on?
No, I don't believe so.
I think you should. It's just Andy, Yorma, and Akiva just talking about the movie and like, they're so funny together, but they tell really interesting stories too. Like about, there's a part in the movie where Rod goes face first into the side of that camper.
Mm-hmm.
And, they all turn around like, oh my God, what happened? And Isla Fisher turns like that. Like she's so like, she just is like, she seems disinterested in what's happening. You know, like everybody goes like this and she kind of just turns very casually towards camera.
Uh-huh.
And, Yorma and Andy are like, whoa, Isla, like what happened there? Was that just like bad acting? And then Akiva goes, nope, that's bad directing on my part. I didn't tell her what was going on. And so I just told her to turn. Oh. I just told her to turn and I got a bad shot. So that's on me. So there's little tidbits like that I think are very funny. But
I love when they start walking down the street and is it called The Voice? What's the song? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's so funny, and then like it becomes like a big, you know, riot and stuff.
And then there's like people on the side of the street singing the song. You're the voice if you understand it.
Yeah. I'll never not think that him sort of like dancing out his rage in the forest and then like falling impossibly far is not funny. Like that is just
I might just
it's like we've talked. There's like the shot where he just like it looks like he got launched out of a cannon, like. He's like flat, like where, what, how did he end up going that fast at that angle?
I might watch the movie tonight. That's, you're encouraging me to watch.
There you go.
Yeah.
So that was enjoyable. I watched Everybody Wants Some with 2 exclamation points.
Wow.
Which is a Richard Linklater movie. I think this is inferior to Dazed and Confused, which I think is an excellent sort of high school kind of coming of age film that is also like sort of not plotless, but like you're just sort of, it's just truly a day in these people's lives. Mm-hmm. So they're like, yeah, they're all like getting out of high school and some of them are moving up in grades or moving on from high school, but it's not like definitive. Like you don't know where they're going to end up by the end. It's really left up in the air. And I just think that's really brilliant. This one's much more focused on, it took a group of baseball players for their college, and they're all about kind of like, they're starting to gel with the new people coming in as freshmen to their sort of dorm. You got the kind of egos of the older guys. They are trying to get some, it's like a horny movie, although not like, I'm surprisingly like not as horny as I thought. Like they're all trying to hook up, but there's only like one little instance I remember where, like, you see, like, shorts come off a girl's butt and then, like, someone, like, going to bed to hook up with a girl. But I was like, oh, I feel like this could be a lot more, like, not graphic, but, like, a lot more people, yeah, like, making out or, like, getting caught having sex and stuff. So for the title, I feel like it's a little misleading.
Sure.
I was like, hey, my dick's right here, man. What the fuck are we doing? No, I enjoyed it. It is not its fault, but, like, it looks too digital to me. Like, it doesn't have, like, the film look. So, like, it looks more modern, even though everything aesthetically is, I think it's 1980 is the year. So it's, like, late, you know, it's like they're coming out of the 70s in that sort of fashion, but it just looks too, like, good in a way that it's, like, unconvincing.
Sure.
And maybe that's sort of just the way it kind of pans out with the technology and how you're shooting it, which is, like, it's not bad. It's like you want to see what the fuck you're watching. You want to see someone to shoot something competently, but it sort of takes a little bit away from it. I think Dazed and Confused is the superior Linklater coming of age film for me. But I still recommend it. I still think people should seek it out if you enjoy his work, especially if you like Dazed and Confused. Everybody wants some. And then the other one I wanted to mention, saw it on at a bar and then, like, went home and finished it was
Your favorite
Ender's
way to watch
Game.
Movies is seeing starting it at a bar and then finishing at home.
At a bar on, it's like how Max watches trailers. Like, it's like no audio, some visual, my head's down. I had never seen it. I know Orson Scott Card is a piece of shit. and then the bartender
took the joke right out of my mouth. I was going to,
yeah. And then the bartender, which is what I call bartenders, was like, oh, this is actually so much worse. Like, the book is so much better. And I was like, well, probably not going to go fucking read the book, but, you know, good to know that this is not, the end all be all. But the main kid in it is very intense. He's got, like, these crazy eyes and I forget what all he's been in. Since then, you got Harrison Ford when he still sort of gave a shit a little bit. But again, I don't know if he gave a shit ever. I feel like even when he was Han Solo, he was like, fuck it.
I think that's...
So, God bless him. It was interesting, and I understood even just watching initially through the screens muted kind of what was going on. I know sort of the idea behind it. You know what? It does have a connection to a current show that I really enjoy, though. One of the rival team captains, he gets sort of Ender gets assigned to this squad. And there's a dude who is shorter than everyone on the fucking team, but, like, comes up to this guy and is like, hey, guess what? You're not allowed to train. And also, like, during the game, like, you hang back and, like, you're not allowed to do shit. Like, we are all going to move forward and do the game. And, like, you have to, like, fucking not do shit. And he's being a real asshole, but he is the short king from the Fallout TV show.
Oh, yeah.
Lucy's brother that hangs back in the vault. And I love that. I love that dude. And also, it's just like, it would rock to, like, meet him and be like, damn, I'm taller than your ass. I have no idea. He could be taller than me for all I know. But he's put against taller actors. Yeah. So at least in Fallout, he's always next to that, like, his dude who looks like he's 6'8 or something.
I think
that's
their cousin, right?
It's Lucy's cousin is his friend. Yeah. And he's Lucy's brother, but, I enjoyed, it was like, right. I was like, whoa, well, this guy's got, like, he's got, like, a big schnoz and where do I recognize him? And I was like, oh, it's the guy from Fallout. So it was a fun connection. Enjoyed seeing that. I did go back and, like, actually watch it at home, but not great in my opinion. And I could see where if maybe the book is good and it sort of, marred that, but, at least I have that under my belt now. Orson Scott Card, Burn in Hell. And that's what I have seen.
Max, what about you?
I've only watched three movies. I watched a young Sherlock Holmes, which was executive produced by both Kathleen Kennedy and Steven Spielberg, and produced by Henry Winkler, apparently. But
hey.
most of the cast is pretty... I didn't recognize them, at least. And it's just Sherlock Holmes meeting up with Watson at school and kind of how Sherlock Holmes got started solving mysteries when some people start dying and it turns out it was all Egyptians. It's all their fault.
What?
it's really weird. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it, but I watched it. And then I watched The Sunlit Night, which is Jenny Slate. And she is kind of like, her family situation is kind of getting fucked up. I think she has a breakup, and then her sister is like getting married, and she's a little bit hurt by that. And her parents are also breaking up. Yeah, did she break up? Anyways, she's having troubles at home, and she decides she needs to get away, and she picks up a job in Norway, I think.
Mm-hmm. And, I was hoping you're going to say Egypt.
it's all their fault. But she heads over there and starts painting a barn, and runs into Zach Galifianakis over there, and Gillian Anderson in a very small part.
Wow.
As a Russian mother of the main love interest guy. I don't know. It was also a little bit weird and a very slow movie. But it was all right. Yeah, I would say it was all right. It was an interesting watch. Mm-hmm. And then I watched Past Lives.
I want to watch this real bad.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good one. It's A24 film, and they keep putting in 20, like it starts at a year and then jumps 24 years backwards and then goes 12 years into the future when these character, like they're 12 when they jump back. So 12 years after that, they're 24.
Okay.
And then it jumps another 12 years back to the present, which is 24 years past the first one. So I think the whole 24 thing, that's how they got the funding from A24.
See, it's right here, 24.
It's right here, 24. You got to make this movie. And they're like, sure, sounds good.
Our hands are tied. I don't know what to tell you. We don't have that much money, but we have to.
Yeah, this is about a lady leaving Korea for a life in Canada and then New York. And her childhood crush kind of like meeting back up with her and then, you know, like getting in touch and then meeting up. And it's kind of a love story between the two of them. Another slow one. Pretty good if you're into romance movies, long-distance relationships, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. Hit it up.
Hit it up.
Hit it up.
Hit it up. And that's all that I've seen. How about you, Andrew?
I watched Whip It, the Elliot Page movie from 2009 about roller derby. It's good. That is a really fun watch. It was popped up on Paramount Plus, I think. But yeah, I was just looking for something to watch, and that's a movie I enjoyed a lot when it came out, and I enjoyed it again. It's a very sweet parent movie. Like Daniel Stern plays her dad, and is a very sweet dad. I like him a lot in it. And I don't know, like it also like it's. Juliette Lewis plays like kind of the villain in the movie, but like she's just so great in it. She's like this, you're supposed to kind of dislike her, but she's just so fun in it that I end up liking her. It's Drew Barrymore's, I believe, first and maybe only directed movie. I don't think she's ever directed since, but it was definitely her first one. And it's good. Like she does a good job, and it's a fun movie, and it's well paced. And I don't know. Have you guys seen it before?
I remember the poster. It's like, you know, like the roller derby person with a green, kind of a green outfit going, but never watched it.
Yeah, I would recommend it. I think it's fun.
Were there two roller derby movies that came out around the same time?
If you're thinking of Rollerball?
Rollerball, yeah, like maybe that. Rollerball is like the late 90s.
Mm. Okay.
Because that was like Chris Klein at the height of his powers, but.
Maybe that is what I'm thinking of. Maybe I'm.
Rollerball 2002.
Oh wow! So they came out in the same within the same decade. So I guess so. Yeah, I like this movie a lot. I think it's cute and fun, and it like all the, you know, the play on like the sort of roller derby names that they come up with for everybody are all fun, and it's a fun movie. I like it a lot.
Right.
All right, guys, let's move into some TV shows we've seen.
TV shows we've seen.
We've seen.
Robert, I know one TV show you've watched.
Yes, I'm fully caught up on Fallout, which I don't know if I don't think we covered no. The last time.
No.
So I'm going to keep it to myself basically until we all cover it. But I really enjoyed it. Tons of great stuff from the games that didn't feel. It felt much more like you could pause it and be like, "Hey, there's that thing," and it felt less like, you know, fan servicey in like a negative way. There are some people that are apparently mad about the canon because this show takes place 15 years after the New Vegas game, and so there's elements of things that are sort of, you know, explained in a way that are not, you know, jiving with everyone. And I just am not. And I love Fallout, but I'm just not precious about it in the way that, like, I'm just happy there's a damn good adaptation of this into a show. I'm glad it's been greenlit for a second season. And I think they're just trying to give themselves some room to breathe. It's kind of like how, like, there's some good Star Wars stuff, but it feels like they're just trying to fit so much into, like, this little time period a lot. And I want them to kind of keep, you know, move out a couple years, jump back, you know, 1,000 or jump forward 1,000. And this one's only apparently like 15 years ahead of some game events, but I still feel there's a lot of room to explore and do some fun stuff. And also, like, the games are video games, so you get to very much play your own story. And especially in the New Vegas' case, like, there's multiple canonical endings. All of your companions get sort of canon endings depending on how you choose to do things. So if it really bugs you, just go and play the game how you want to do. And damn it if I didn't start a new Vegas file after I finished.
Damn.
I was like, God, I can't believe they got me again. But very enjoyable, and I hope we will cover it at some point in the future.
Yeah. Any other TV?
I think that is... I don't think I've had any other... I'm keeping up on X-Men 97 and the Whiplash from... the episode a couple weeks ago to the most recent one was Stark, because it's very, it starts one way, it goes crazy, and then this episode was like kind of corny and you know, cosmic, and it was sort of like, I mean, look, they can't all be that level of the episode 5, but it was a bit of a whiplash, but I'm still enjoying it. So.
I agree.
Yeah.
Mickey Rourke back again.
Yeah. You called it the Whiplash.
Well, I am going to jump right in here and tell you that I finished Invincible.
Nice.
And yeah, digging it. Really like it. Stuff from the comics coming back, but it's been long enough that I'm like, that it's like a surprise. I'm like, oh yeah, that happened. But yeah, I'm liking it. I think it does. Well, we've talked about it before. It does a good job of taking its world seriously and also having fun with it and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of hyper violent. Kinda. It's like majorly hyper violent. Yes, it's one of those things really where, like, violent. Normally with an animated movie, you can get away with a lot. And like, maybe they knew that. And so, like, this is, they like take it to the extreme every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's almost always shocking, which is kind of funny. Yeah. I remember there's a part in the comic where a character flies through another character and like punches through their torso. And there was a behind the scenes that was like, apparently, like, the standards board was like, you couldn't show this character from the opposite angle, like entering and leaving the person's body, but you can show like the exit wound of them flying through or something.
That
weird.
Seems
where I was
worse.
Like, yeah, and it feels like worse to me, where I was like, but it got through, and it was like, apparently this was the version that got character. Approved. And I was like, all right, I'll go with it. Not that it was anything that happened specifically in this series, in this last season, but I'm curious to see what they do, because it also has the benefit of sort of having a static art style for the most part. Like, it kind of looks how it looks the whole time, and the comic did kind of vacillate between artists on some issues, which was a problem I had at some points. But the rumor has it that they already have more coming down the pipe and might even be out at the end of this year. So.
Yeah,
I did think there's a part that's kind of funny where they, I think they go to a convention and they're talking to, like, the person in charge of whatever. Oh yeah, I think it's the Seance Dog show in the whatever.
Yeah, that's a great part in the comics as well, where it's like, well, you never notice that, like, they repeat panels to kind of do stuff, and then it's three panels of Mark like oh, I never noticed that. And like, yeah, saving resources to kind of do that kind of shit. So funny.
Yeah, it's really good calling out all the weird thing. And they do say that same thing. Like sometimes the art style changes and they show like Mark with a really glowing, shiny face.
A very detailed face that kind of looks a little bit more. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was really fun. It is weird how much it jumps back, because here we're talking about hyperviolence and then just like cute little talking about animation and all that stuff. But it does a good job bouncing back and forth between the two. I still think Seth Rogen's a weird choice for the Alan voice, but it also works. And then I also watched Fallout, which we'll talk about later, but I didn't watch all of it. I've only watched like first 2-3 episodes or something. Yeah, we'll talk about it later. It's pretty fun, but I got my gripes. I'll just say that so Robert can stew for a couple of weeks.
He did drop a Last Jedi thing either on this or the last record, so it's you can both stew at each other for a while. I'll just be over here with my feet up and my hands behind my head laughing. I'm just fucking laughing.
Oh, isn't it helpful not to have passionate
I don't care about anything.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, I define myself by what media I consume.
Yeah, it's not what you're like, it's what you like, right?
That's it. Yeah. How about you, Andrew? What have you watched?
I also watched all of Fallout and enjoyed it a lot. I was really happy because, like, I mean, it's just nice to have like a video game adaptation that feels like they care about the source material and it's also good. And it, like, the whole time I was like, you know what I really like is, and this is hopefully not a spoiler for you, Max. At no point does the show go into vats. You know what I mean? Like, it just, like, there's, like, in the Doom movie, when they go into first person for like 2 minutes, I was like, this sucks. Like, I know what they're doing here. And it's stupid. And so I was glad that there was no like point where it's like, oh, you know, or there was no VAT screen, but there was also not a moment where she's like, if I shoot him in the hand, I have a 95% chance of hitting, but if I hit him if I shoot for the
hand. I would argue that, how far are you again, Max?
I think I saw maybe what you're talking about. Is this the ghoul?
Well, that's what I was going to reference, is that the only time it feels like almost like VATS is when the ghoul is in a shootout and it feels like he's sort of like slow down, like shooting like really good shots on people. And it's like, all right, this kind of feels like VATS-y, but it's never doing the queuing up stuff.
Yeah.
But I did think that was the kind of almost like the compromise where it was like,
yeah.
This guy's got good perception. Maybe he's got a high perception special. So but he's doing like the accurate shots and stuff.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, Andrew, though, that it doesn't beat you over the head with it for the most part. We're not talking about it, right? But the stim pack I thought was funny. Like how they use that.
I like that they established like, hey, this is just video game ass healing, and like you can be like mortally wounded and then jab yourself with a syringe with a fucking, you know, oven timer on the top and you're good to go.
Yeah.
It's like it's good to establish that so that you know kind of the rules of the universe. So
So I enjoyed that a lot. I also just saw that they have the third season and final season of Sweet Tooth is coming out, and I had forgotten that I never finished that. So I
never even did the second, I don't think.
Yeah. So I actually hadn't finished the first season, so I'm making my way through the first season, so I am catching up on Sweet Tooth.
Nice.
Right now. And it's one of those things, like, it's hard for me to tell like what, because like some of it just looks real fake, you know, like there's just parts where it's like they're clearly not in this location at all. This is like such a digitally rendered scene, but I also have to remember that like I believe parts of it were filmed during COVID, so like it's just like, what, you know, what if this was not done practically because it was not safe to do it practically, and what if it is like they just thought they'd CGI it and it'd be fine. So otherwise, like, I mean, you know, the Gus's antlers and ears and stuff, it all looks good. You know, there's a couple characters that don't look good. There's a couple CGI, just completely CGI'd characters that don't look real good in practical settings, but yeah, I don't know. Like, I think it's a good adaptation of the comic, which was, it's weird that this got adapted at all, and that there's three seasons of it, because it's not even like a very successful comic. You know, like, people, I think probably some comic readers know it.
I think it was lauded, but I don't feel like it's like a huge mainstream success. Like,
no.
Among comic fans, they liked it, but it doesn't feel like the most lucrative property.
Yeah, it sort of feels like to me like what, I guess like the comic itself reflects Jeff Lemire, where it's like, I think people who like comics probably know about it, but it's not like a mainstream name. And that's kind of true of Jeff Lemire too, is like people know his name within the comic industry, but outside of comics, he's not like a famous comic book writer in the way that like, I mean, I guess there's not a ton of famous comic book writers, but like Grant Morrison's kind of like a bigger name than you know, most. So I think that's probably like a more mainstream comic book name for people, but like
Jerry Schuster, Seth MacFarlane,
Alan Moore,
Alan Moore, Neil Gaiman.
Yes.
Fucking, shall I continue? Please don't make me continue.
Did you say Seth MacFarlane?
He did.
I said Seth MacFarlane. I think he did some Family Guy comics. I listened to a podcast about him today, so that's maybe why I had him
on the
brain.
That's why you're on the brain. You're also thinking about 9/11. Anyways, guys, let's talk about the movie that we watched for this week from 2013. We watched The World's End. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. 2013, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, Martin Freeman,
Scorsese.
Martin Scorsese directed this movie. And do not watch it on your phone because you'll be real mad. And a bunch of Brits, Rosamund Pike in this movie as well. This is the finale of the Cornetto trilogy, the Cornetto trilogy.
Yeah.
Would you guys recommend people watch The World's End, not freely streaming anywhere, but available for I bought it on Apple for $4. It was like pretty cheap. So I was happy.
Might as well.
I didn't own it before this, which I was surprised about, but, yeah, so you can rent it for a pretty good price or buy it on Amazon or Apple, I think, for both $4 or $5.
Buy it for a rental price.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
So would you guys recommend people watch The World End?
I would. I've seen it multiple times. I still feel like it is probably not my top of the Cornetto movies, but I still enjoy it. And I'm excited to get into it a little bit. I feel like it has a stronger first act than a second act, but maybe we can talk about that.
Yeah, Max, what about you?
I agree with that. I would say this might be the bottom of the three, perhaps. But I do think that it's a good movie, and I think it's worth watching. It's just not the best of this batch of movies, I think. Mm-hmm. How about you, Andrew?
Disagree. It is my favorite of the Cornetto trilogy. I think if I can critique it a little bit, I mean, I think people should watch it. I think it's an easy recommend. I think the postscript, like the prologue or the epilogue, whatever
the epilogue,
the very end of the movie, I think is completely unnecessary and I think hurts the movie a lot. If I were to be just
interesting. I kind of dig it, but we'll get into it.
Yeah, I don't like it, and I think it hurts the movie more than anything else. But So yes, this is the third Cornetto trilogy. This is a pastiche on like apocalypse, alien invasion type of movies. Yeah, what do you guys think of it?
Yeah, it's interesting because like I said, I think I enjoy until the alien aspect comes in, I think it's a fun exploration of this sort of loser, Simon Pegg's character, which is also fun because he is not pathetic's maybe too strong a word, but he's sort of like not doing enough in his relationship in Shaun of the Dead. Like he could be doing so much more. He's not giving Liz attention. He needs to he needs something to drive him and make him, the man he has the potential to be. And it unfortunately takes a zombie apocalypse for that to occur. Nicholas Angel in Hot Fuzz, he's too good at his job to the point where he's so by the book that he becomes looks like an asshole to everyone because he's, when he kicks all the kids out of the bar and he's like, job well done. And the bartenders are like, thanks a fucking lot, man. Mm-hmm. ruined all our business. So it's fun to have him be like just a failure. Like he is just pathetic. It's sad to see him trying to hold on to his youth. I watched this with Jamie, and her kind of criticism, and I kind of understand it, is she didn't sort of believe that the character playing him as a kid is then who grows up to be Simon Pegg. And I don't fault it for being like, I don't think a movie needs to have the most perfect casting, but it does sort of feel like it feels like they hired someone to play the guy that used to be him as a kid, as opposed to like someone that grew up to be that. Like he even sees him later and he's like, God, I was so cute. And it's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't even really like you look like you ever used to be that person. Like, and I think that's a minor thing. I don't necessarily share that sentiment, but I kind of get where she's coming from. And yeah, I think I ultimately kind of like the initial journey, him being, you know, tricking everyone to get going, the kind of mystery of what all happened exactly between them, you know, where they all landed. Are they actually happy? Are any of them in sort of enjoying being back here? And I don't dislike the alien element. I think that's really fun. I think especially like it's vibrant. Like I love that their like arms pop off way too easily. I love like the blue blood.
I think love there's that some... there's like that the limbs can be replaced too. Like that one woman who has like the legs on her arm sockets at one point. I just think like that sort of stuff is so fun.
Yeah. And
a lot of interesting action scenes, especially the one in the bathroom.
Yeah. The bathroom action scene is great.
Bathroom action is always great. That's what I
like. I think also
say.
Like, I will say for the second act, I do like that. I mean, it's distressing that Nick Frost breaks his sobriety and basically just like downs all the shots and is like, fuck it, I'm just going to go crazy. Mm-hmm. And like, it sort of helps. Like,
yeah.
He ends up being like a beast. In fact, one of my favorite scenes is when, oh God, I can't quote it, but like, he's like, we got a plan. We're going to do this. And then he kind of stumbles through the door and just like his hand goes through the window and just kind of smashes through it. You know, they, of course, they have their own version of the fence gag as well. Like they do in all the Cornetto movies. But yeah, I do think Nick Frost is, and that's another thing is Nick Frost is a bigger fuck up in the previous two movies. He's the fail son of the, you know, police constable in Hot Fuzz. And he basically is like a Nepo hire and like gets better and gets on the right side by the end. And in the first movie, he barely changes and sort of, you know, then ends up, you know, being, you know, dead. So I like a competent version of him. I kind of like the sort of slow role reversal of all of the films for those two characters, those two actors. It's only a bummer that like he caves and kind of, you know, gets rid of his sobriety and then he becomes sort of the beast he needs to. Mm-hmm. And, Simon Pegg's character is just being a fuck up the entire time and sort of doesn't suffer a consequence quite so much. So,
yeah. I think I think like what I like about this movie is that it is a much more, character introspective movie in terms of like, Simon Pegg's character being like kind of the primary antagonist of the movie throughout most of it. Mm-hmm. He is the driving force, but he's also like the reason why like things are going wrong for everybody in this movie too. I kind of wish that the alien reveal was done in the third act instead of the second act, because like, I think that there's more room for there to be like more of an analog of this character. Cause like, I think it undercuts how desperate and sad his character is when there's an alien reveal like less than an hour into the movie. And so like the fact that they continue doing this fucking pub run while they're also on the run from aliens, I think it like it does kind of undercut, I think, what they're trying to tell with his character, which is that like he's this driving force of like catastrophe. Like he's, and, you know, what you find out by the end of the movie is that his life is so fucking sad that he's, like, tried to kill himself. And this is a last, like, you can almost feel like this is his last, like, desperate plea of, like, this was when my life was good. You know, like...
I peaked then here.
Which is sad to think about.
But.
Please let me have this. And, like, I think the alien reveal, maybe, like, in the way that, like, Hot Fuzz, the town reveal doesn't really happen until like the beginning of Act 3. And like Act Two, you spend so much of the movie wondering like who is the villain.
Act Two is the murder mystery. You don't know if it's, you think it's assuming it's one person,
right? Yeah. And so if you spend Act Two of this movie, like mostly kind of feeling sort of sorry for Simon Pegg's character, but also like what's going on in this town? Like why is it so weird? Why are people? Because like you really don't get a lot of time to be like, man, this town's kind of weird, huh? In this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get what you're saying, but I also think that. I think just the comedy of they figure out there's something crazy happening, like way too crazy. And then they're like, well, the strategy is we just keep doing what we've told everyone we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
If they think we're idiots and we're just still doing our pub crawl, then they're none the wiser. And we can sort this out as we go along. But it's also still him being like, even in the face of an otherworldly invasion, I need to do this for myself.
Yeah.
This is the balm for my soul. So I get what you're saying, and I think it would have been maybe like crazier to have like a full on alien reveal by third act, but I think it is so much part of the comedy that and speaks to his character's arc that all comes out early on enough that he's like, well, I mean, we're still gonna keep doing this though, right? Like this is the best idea that we have.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that's a valid critique as well.
It's also like it really harkens back to, I think, like his Shaun of the Dead character, which is just like, if all else fails, we go to the pub. You know, like that's, you know, in Shaun of the Dead too, we're just like, I don't have any other fucking ideas. Let's go to the pub. And like this one was a obviously a much more hyper, you know, like realized version of that, where like this dude wants to do.
Or like we could literally leave. Get out of this town, inform the authorities somewhere else, and you could get a bar. In fact, we could go tell the police while you get a drink at the next town's bar.
Right.
If that's really what you need. But it has to be the Golden Mile. It has to be all those. I forget if we've talked about when we've mentioned this movie before. Have you guys seen sort of the connections between the names of the bars and what's happening in the story?
I do. So it's the, what's the one with the king in the name?
The King's Head.
The King's Head. And that's isn't it a drawn picture of Simon Pegg's character in the movie? Like on the...
Oh, it might be. I don't know if I caught that. But there's stuff like the two-headed dog, I think, is one. And that's when I think the twins reveal themselves as aliens to Rosamund. Mm-hmm. She's like, I love when she's like sitting outside with them having a smoke. And she's like, yeah, and they said there's fucking aliens and their arms come off and they're blue. And they're like, did he really say that? They're always in sync and she never finds that weird. It's like, twins don't normally do that.
Right.
And then of course you get that great fight scene later where they're fighting in the sort of the back patio and like one of the woman's legs are now on the other woman's arms and swinging around.
Yeah.
Like just wild stuff. There's some really, really fun fight choreography. Yeah. Like I mentioned before.
Max, what about you? What do you like or not like about this movie?
I think I agree with a lot of the critiques that have been leveled against it. I think the second half is weaker. I think it should have spent more time with the characters early on and less with the reveal later on. Although, like, I don't know if... I feel like it also did need some kind of action push when it does get that. So I don't know. I feel like there's probably a better way to do that. Do a little mix of each, where it's not fully just like, okay, now we're dealing with robots and everybody knows about robot aliens and everybody knows what's going on. There's still a little bit of mystery there too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it does kind of like take the light off of the characters. I also feel like even though you are kind of gradually introduced to the background of these characters, it's not in a way that you get to feel it. You don't really like... You kind of get a taste here and there, but you don't really get a sense of the whole character of them. And so, like, I feel like that was the strongest point of this. I guess there's crazy action choreography is in it, and then also the introspection on the characters. And those two are the strongest points. And they don't necessarily mesh together as well as they probably could, because they're two separate things and they both kind of compete for time rather than informing the other. You kind of stop doing the character introspection when you start fighting the robots, and then you stop fighting robots when you're talking about your mm-hmm. your feelings and stuff like that. And it's always like one is in the break of the other rather than like one thing informing the other and leading to it. And this person, like, I don't know, reaching within themselves to do these crazy action scenes because yeah. they were traumatized in the past or something. I don't know. Whatever it is, it doesn't seem like those two things like mesh for me, but mm-hmm. they're both fun and it is fun to watch the movie, but I think that it could flow together a bit better.
Yeah, I think it is also like probably the least fun of the three movies too. Like it's because I think it is a much more serious main character problem than the other two. I think like, you know, what's going on with Simon Pegg's character is just like, it's a little more serious. So like this movie itself just kind of feels a little heavier than the other two also.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
You rarely hear me say this. I think this movie could be longer and I think it would be better. And I like, part of that is that like, when you're it's like an hour 30 into the movie, when you first see Pierce Brosnan, and I was like, man, like I wish he was in this more. Like I love seeing him and stuff. I think he's a fucking great actor. And I think like, unfortunately, like he would be such a great, like, I just think he has kind of missed the opportunity to be like the front man, the front serious man in a comedy. And like, I just think he could have been in this more. And I think he would have added to the movie being in it a little more. And I kind of wish, like, it's weird because so when they meet the big alien, which I think they call the Light, it's Bill Nighy's voice.
Yes.
And like, you never see him, but he is the voice in it. And I'm just kind of like, I kind of wish this was all given to like Pierce Brosnan, to be honest. Like even Pierce Brosnan loses his own voice at some point and Bill Nighy's speaking for him. I kind of wish the whole thing had been Pierce Brosnan. I wish he was just in the movie more. And I wish the movie was just like a little longer. I think it could have served to be like 10, 15 minutes longer.
Wait till you hear about, he's done a couple James Bond movies. You'd really like that. He's in a lot of that if you want to watch those.
I'll have to check that out.
I don't know. And I don't know if there's Simon Pegg in those, but you know, if you watch them all, you can let me know. I don't disagree. I mean, he's so fun to see on screen. But he also has like, Edgar Wright has his favorites that he wants to get in there.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily love that ending either of just like, gets lured to the last bar where he then drops into a hole into the ground and then talks to an alien species where the alien species gets frustrated that humanity is just so perfectly wild and like
they're just like too resistant to like even when they're offered sort of like, hey, everything can be like good and calm, and their argument is like, no, it needs our existence requires chaos. Like we need as a species to be able to make our own mistakes, which is kind of true, but yeah. It is sort of like an exposition-y dump. But you know what? Even though I'm kind of like, yeah, it's like they're resetting. They showed their young versions of their blanks, blah, blah, blah. I do love when like, they're basically like, hey, fuck you. Like we need to be able to be human. And then the intelligence is like, you know what? All right. Fuck it. Yeah. And says, fuck it. I'm like, oh, I kind of love that the alien just like so frustrated, like
just gave up.
You know what? You're just not part of the program anymore. You know what? We're just, and also like in a funny way, like, are they like, would it have been better for humanity to have that sort of stewardship? Who knows? But Simon Pegg decided no. And he cut it off.
I mean, to be fair, they're also harvesting the humans that they replace. Like that was a,
you know, yes, they're harvesting, but they're sort of like giving them the illusion of like, you get to live in your younger best self and have this sort of blissful, sort of perfect period existence.
Like a version of them gets to continue, but that like Martin Freeman's character is dead. Like
it's compost. Yeah.
Yeah. So like a version of them continues on, but like, it's not like Martin Freeman's, you know, like they're transported into an alien body. They're dead. So, like, that's just a cloned version of him that exists.
Sure. I mean, then you get into sort of the argument of, like, is your clone you, or is it just something else with your memories and everything like that? So, I get it. But, I just...
I don't agree with you that the aliens were right to kill those people, Robert. Mm-hmm. So, I just think we're just going to have to disagree.
Okay, cut that. That's not what I fucking said.
And then I agree with you that... Andrew, that the epilogue I think is kind of out of place, and it kind of like Also, the whole idea that when the aliens leave, they don't just leave and say, like, okay, you know, the damage we've done to that town, we've done. They also set off a gigantic explosion that, like,
an sets EMP. Up, that, yeah.
Yeah. And, like, okay, that gets rid of all technology on the entire planet, and there's no getting it back or anything like that because, like, humans didn't invent any of that stuff. It was actually just the aliens.
Yeah, they established that the aliens landed in 1990. And so, like, they set off an EMP that knocks out all technology. It's not like they took away, you know, because they say, like, oh, how do you think you made all these advancements? And it's not like they just did a thing that, like, eliminated cell phones and PlayStations. It's like it knocked out all electricity.
Yeah, no light bulbs, no vehicles, absolutely nothing.
I think it'd be a cool video game, kind of Fallout-y. I like it.
I think, like,
you play a very sober dude who has a bunch of blanks in his crew.
It felt. And then, sorry, go ahead, Max.
And then that part where he's just like drinking water. I know it's like a reference to before, but he's just going around killing people, right? Like, yeah, that's the thing.
It didn't make sense to me. Like, his character motivation, like, there was no mention of, like, why or how he got sober. Like, is he thriving so much in the apocalypse that he's just, like, got his shit together? Like, if you're gonna do that scene, I think there should, like, honestly, like, again, even though I didn't like the epilogue, I think it's because it feels tacked on and too quick. Like, there's just no, like, I don't get it. Like, it felt like a weird studio note that they just kind of threw on because, like, well, you know, like, if you're going to give us this note, then, like, fuck you, here's your scene. Like, it kind of felt that way about it, where it's just, like, minimal effort into it because it just, like, why is he, you know, why is he palling around with these
things? Paris?
with the blanks. Like, why is he palling around with a bunch of them when he tried to kill them just, like, you know, 5 minutes ago in the movie? And, like, you know, what's his purpose? What is his motivation? Why is he palling around with them? Why is he doing better now? It's just, like, there's a lot of things that just, like,
why is he starting fights that involve swords with humans that just happen to hate blanks? He's like that. Those are the villains now. Like,
I mean, it's kind of like Obi-Wan going into the bar on Tatooine. He knows that, you know, they don't want droids. He still kind of starts to walk in with them, and then he ends up cutting someone's arm off. It feels to me exactly like Star Wars, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I wish that didn't exist in the movie, or if it did, it had a little bit more, I don't know, just like explanation behind it. Like, I don't need the movie to hold my hand and tell me, here's why he's doing better now, but, like, just tell me a little bit of, like, how he's thriving, why it's working so well for him in the apocalypse, to the point where he's like, I'm the king, baby, and, like, has a fucking sword on his back, and, yeah.
It's definitely not as good of a button on it as, like, Shaun of the Dead, where it's like, we're cutting back, zombies have been sort of acclimated into society, and then we get Ed in the back shed, you know, playing the video games and stuff like that.
One of the things I did.
This is your favorite of the Coronettos, so
it is.
This is fascinating to me that you don't.
I'm complaining a lot about it, but I think just because I like it so much that I think it, like, it is my favorite of them. But it's not a perfect movie.
Sure, 100%.
One part of the epilogue I did like was the like cloned versions of them, like the clone Martin Freeman, who's half his head is missing, is like a real estate agent, like, just kind of fell in.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that was really funny.
I think it's like, that's funny. And, like, I think that worked in it, but I just think, like, the stuff with Simon Pegg's character didn't particularly land for me.
Sure.
Any final thoughts before we head out?
No, I mean, it was fun to revisit this trilogy, especially in, like, a short amount of time. I enjoy Edgar Wright's film, so it was nice to come back to. Not my, probably the lowest still for me in this series, but interesting. I'm glad he got to, seems like he did get to kind of approach, you know, these two main characters as vastly different sort of, you know, characters in all the different movies. And like you said, not a perfect film by any stretch of the imagination, but a fun swing.
Yeah.
It's not disinteresting for sure.
So. Max, any final thoughts?
I can't wait for the fourth one. I wonder what genre they're going to tackle. I wonder what flavor of Cornetto they'll.
I can't wait till the reboot. Not even sequels. I want them to just get fucking remade right now.
Yeah, with Timothy Chalamet as Sean.
4K. I'd watch it.
I would too. I mean, yeah, yeah. If they did
musical version also.
I wouldn't watch it.
Okay, well, that's the next movie we're doing. So,
all right,
Timothy Chalamet and Lady Gaga.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.